Chapter 1. The command tent stood in the center of the Raven Guard base. Its walls flapped sluggishly in the wind that blew over the wide plain. Inside, surrounded by his sergeants, Reza Shkrevan leaned over the tacticarium table, eyeing the hololithic map of the region.
"They're flanking, Shadow Captain,"
Sergeant Behrazi said. Krevan traced a route on the map leading down from the flashpoint at the bridge.
"Sweeping around to the south?"
he asked.
"Yes, as expected. Any signs that they care about our presence?"
It was most likely that the orcs had seen the drop pods come down, though he knew, given their single-minded focus on the Eldar, that it was possible they were unaware of the Raven Guard's presence, but he could not risk such an assumption. Krevan did not believe in the ignorant act. Information was the most potent weapon he knew. The warrior in the dark required a battle barge. The one with full knowledge of the enemy needed only a blade.
"The greenskins appear to be focused on the Eldar," Behrazi told him. "Not one of them has shown any interest in this location." "Good. Thank you, Brother Sergeant."
He thought for a moment while the rest of his sergeants waited. If the orcs wanted a fight, they would find the Raven Guard 8th Company ready. The drop pods had landed about a kilometre south of the city of Reclamation, and Krevan had ordered the base established here. The location was nondescript. It was not a defensible position, a fact that held exactly no importance for Krevan. The Raven Guard were on the attack on Lepidus Prime. If they wound up on the defence, then they had already failed their mission. The location was a useful one for its openness. Enemies would be visible from a great distance.
"Have you reached my fellow captains?"
Krevan asked Akralas, who was operating the Vox.
"I have Captain Mulcibar. No luck with Temur Khan."
"Anything at all from the moon?"
"Fragmentary. Some brief moments from the Mordian Iron Guard."
"Which leads me to guess you are hearing nothing good."
"It seems the orcs have a great deal of heavy armour on the moon as well."
"The White Scars must be delighted,"
Krevan muttered. He indulged in a moment of irony at the expense of the Sons of Chogoris, but only a moment. Though the Raven Guard had no love for the White Scars, the difficulties that Temur was facing had implications for them all. The Imperial forces had expected the orcs to be formidable, but based on how long they were known to have been in the Lepidus system, it didn't seem possible for them to have ramped up tank production to such a degree. Yet they had. That was the reality of the situation. Krevan accepted that. There was information that was missing. That bothered him more. He took the handset from Akralas. He was connected to Mulcibar, captain of the Salamander's 5th Company on the strike cruiser Verdict of the Anvil.
"Has there been any change?"
he asked Mulcibar.
"None. All quiet." "That won't last. We are just getting started."
He was aware that his optimism sounded forced. The plan was ambitious. The Overfiend Orc had defiled an Imperial system. The White Scars, the Raven Guard, and the Salamanders would do more than crush the invading force. They would use the Overfiend's own temerity against the Warlord. For whatever reason, the Overfiend had committed massive resources to conquering Lepidus. If the beast wanted the system badly enough, the thinking went, important losses might draw it out of Octarius to take personal charge of the invasion. Greenskin psychology was not sophisticated. A good fight, frustrated desire, and a point of pride would be enough to call the monster forth from the safety of its stronghold. So the White Scars would destroy the heavy armor manufactorum on the moon of Lepidus Prime. The Raven Guard would put an end to the threat on the planet and so preserve the Imperial colony.
At the edge of the system, the salamanders would wait in the verdict of the anvil for the overfiend to show itself. Yes, an ambitious plan. Sound, as far as it went. Clevan accepted the merits of its conception. He was troubled by its lacunae. For whatever reason. Orcs were creatures of aggression and impulse. Clevan had rarely known them to do anything for a reason. But rarely wasn't never. When there was discernible reason behind orc actions, that was when they were at their most profoundly dangerous, as Armageddon had learned to its cost. The orcs had not hit Lepidus as a raiding force. This was a campaign. The Manufactorum was proof of that. And now, silence from Temur and the White Scars. Signs that something was calling very forcefully to the orcs.
"If we are just getting started," Mulcibar said, "I wish our start were more assured. We cannot raise Temur on the Vox."
"Nor can we."
"And your situation?"
"Interesting."
"When a Raven Guard tells me something is interesting," said Mulcibar, "I brace myself for the worst."
"There is an Eldar force combating the orcs."
"Oh, that is interesting."
"Puzzling, too."
Unknowns on the moon. Unknowns on Lepidus Prime. Too many. Mulcibar was right to be wary.
"To all appearances, their primary objective is to prevent the orcs from taking reclamation."
"Why would the Eldar concern themselves with the fate of one of our cities?"
"Exactly."
The salamander was silent for a moment, taking in the full contours of the mystery. Then he said,
"What are your plans?"
"The orcs are more numerous and better equipped than the Navy's reports to us had suggested. The Eldar might be useful. The orcs won't see us coming."
Mulcibar chuckled. "Does any foe see the Raven Guard coming?"
"Not if I can help it," Clevan admitted. "Good hunting, brother."
"And to you."
Clevan turned back to his officers.
"Brother Sergeant Kyligus, take your squad to the bridge."
The span over the gorge was the clear focus of the struggle between the two Xenos races. He would show Eldar and Greenskins alike that control of the gateway to reclamation belonged to neither.
"Prepare it for demolition. Do not destroy it until you receive my command. Sergeant Behrazi, how large is the orc flanking movement?"
"It is a considerable one. No heavy vehicles, but a number of smaller ones. They're putting a premium on speed."
"Your estimation?"
"If they manage to come up behind the Eldar, that war is finished."
"Then we shall prolong it."
Kyligus and his men approached the bridge through the city. They had the streets to themselves. The orcs were still a few kilometers distant, but the roar of their invasion had already arrived. An endless howl filled the air and bounced off the facades. The echoes of gunfire and cannon shell were a constant thunder. The sound was a terrible promise of destruction to come. The citizens of Reclamation were off the streets. They hid behind their walls. Kyligus understood the mortals' impulse to seek refuge. He wondered, though, whether they understood how pointless the attempt was. If the orcs entered the city, there would be no defense, no shelter, no mercy. The human occupation of Lepidus Prime was a relatively recent one. Reclamation had been established only in the last century. The planet was verdant, fertile, temperate, and free of Xenos taint. But the system's proximity to Octarius had made it an uncertain proposition. When it had appeared to the more optimistic members of the Adeptus Administratum that the Overfiend's war with the Tyranids would keep both Xenos horrors occupied with each other indefinitely, permission had been granted for colonization. The founders of Reclamation were the descendants of the noble families of Orok, the survivors who had fled the Orc takeover of Octarius hundreds of years before. The spread of the colony had been slow. Reclamation remained the only major population center. There were a few small clusters of homes on farmland, some distance to the east, but most of those had been abandoned as the Orc invasion had dawned. The humans had withdrawn into their city. Caeligus had heard of a few of the exchanges that his captain had had with the planetary governor, Aloysius Kesmir. The man's hololith revealed him as a thin creature whose bones seemed slightly too long for his skin. He spoke with a mixture of fear and stubbornness. He was terrified of the Orcs, but determined to stand his ground, or at least remain on it while someone else actually fought the war. Caeligus had the impression that the governor was a good exemplar of the populace. He was unimpressed, but the possible unworthiness of the people of Lepidus was of no concern to the Raven Guard. They had not come to defend a colony. They had come to exterminate an enemy. As he passed through the city, though, he looked at it with interest. Its architecture was not what he had expected in something so new. He saw plenty of prefab rockcrete, but the city was just old enough that the colony's initial homogeneity had eroded. Modifications and additions were breaking down the uniformity, differentiating one hab zone from another, creating a sense of local character. None of this was surprising. What did surprise Caeligus was that there were frequent signs of much greater age. Some of the variations in construction appeared original. There were foundations just visible above ground that were not rockcrete. They were something else, a material that appeared to be almost organic. Caeligus had the impression of something that had been grown. He saw one building after another that had clearly been built atop a pre-existing structure. Yet he knew that prior to the colonization, Lepidus Prime had been uninhabited for as long as it had appeared in imperial records. When the squad reached the bridge, he saw that it too was an anomaly. The surface of its span was not of imperial construction. There were three arches across its width, one at each end and one in the middle. The iconography chiseled into their surface was imperial in subject, but the images looked like emendations. Caeligus suspected they had been added to wipe the memory of something blasphemous from the face of the marble. He walked to the foot of the bridge. On the other side of the gorge, the Eldar were fighting hard. Most of them were mounted on skimmers, the same crimson as their armor. Their movements through the trees were as sinuous as their strikes were rapid. They waged war with a quicksilver, alien elegance. They would be, Caeligus could tell, dangerous opponents. But what Crevan had heard was true. Their position was untenable. They should retreat much further. Given the size of their force, compared to the overwhelming numbers of Orcs, the Eldar were using the wrong tactics. The Orcs were primarily infantry, and Caeligus could hear tanks and blasphemous dreadnought imitations crashing their way through the forest. The Eldar should be using their greater mobility and speed to full advantage. They should already have crossed the bridge, pulling back to return in harrying attacks against the Orc flanks. Instead, they were holding their ground. They weren't just risking their own annihilation, they were ensuring it. The only possible reason for not retreating was an attempt to defend the city. The Eldar were mysterious, unknowable, and untrustworthy, but they were not fools. Yet a suicidal defense of a human city was an action so beyond fathoming that Caeligus wondered if the entire race was mad. "What do you think they're doing?" Havran asked. Caeligus shook his head. If they think they're doing anything other than offering themselves up to a slow slaughter, they're mistaken. But their insanity is not our concern. Let's get that bridge ready to fall. Setting the melter bombs took a matter of minutes. The Eldar were dying, but managing to hold the orcs at bay. Caeligus knew them to be skilled warriors. He was still impressed, and more puzzled. They were fighting with last-stand desperation. Caeligus could think of few human forces that would give up so much for a city whose strategic value, in the final analysis, was nil. He believed in the defense of reclamation, certainly, but the primary mission was the extermination of the orcs. Perhaps the salamanders would feel differently. He spoke into his vox bead.
The bridge is ready, Shadow Captain.
The orcs are still on the other side?
Both races are. We can cut off access to the west side of reclamation at a moment's notice.
Good. Stand ready, but do nothing.
Varnis was holding a detonator. He was watching Caeligus for the signal. The sergeant shook his head.
Shadow Captain, he said, at this moment neither the orcs nor the Eldar are approaching the city. We can finish our job here and join your assault.
Remain at your current position, Crevan said. Do not destroy the bridge without my express order. Keep me informed of any changes in the situation. Am I clear?
You are, Shadow Captain.
Crevan signed off. Caeligus said to the squad, We wait.
For what? Havran asked.
I don't know, Caeligus admitted.
He was frustrated by Crevan's decision. He was not, however, embarrassed to reveal that he did not understand the reasons behind it. The captain treated information with the care due any great weapon. He was not deceptive with his battle brothers. Caeligus did not think Crevan had ever kept secrets that the company should have known about, but he guarded his thoughts jealously. Caeligus had never been able to read his face. He tried. He had tried earlier, during the briefing. Crevan's expressions were as opaque as if he were wearing his helmet. Caeligus knew the captain would not delay the demolition of the bridge without good motivation. He also knew that he would not be privy to those motives until Crevan chose to reveal them, if ever. Caeligus accepted all of this, but it still frustrated him. He walked to the edge of the bridge. He watched the war on the other side. He watched skill struggle with ferocity. He saw the inevitable draw closer. He saw extraordinary ability ground down a bit at a time, pushed closer and closer to oblivion.
Behrasi should be here, he thought.
The other sergeant had a better appreciation for the finer aspects of tragedy. A few thousand meters to the south of the bridge, Behrasi was a shadow among shadows. He was positioned at the edge of the tree line before the narrow strip of land that ran between the forest and the gorge. The orcs' flanking advance had one quality that Behrasi appreciated. It was direct. They were taking the most obvious route to trap the Eldar in a vise, loop around the edge of the forest and back up again. They were charging at full speed, a mass of fury, operating more on instinct than strategy. That made them easy to anticipate. Their route forward was obvious.
There is a certain luxury in a foe who obediently enters the ambush, Crevan said.
Behrasi would have sworn the Shadow Captain hadn't been at his side a moment before. His years of service in 8th Company had taught him to expect Crevan's sudden appearances, even if he was never able to see his commander approach. Crevan inhabited the shadows like no other warrior in Behrasi's experience. He carried the night within him. It was present, a cloak waiting to cover him, even in broad daylight. The shadows began in Crevan's eyes. They lived there and emerged from there as if the captain could blind whatever met his gaze. Sometimes, when they felt particularly in the dark about the reasons behind Krevan's decisions and they attempted a futile parsing, Behrazi and Kailigus would wind up at the point of their captain's physical obscurity. Kailigus maintained that Krevan was hard to read. Behrazi disagreed. He thought Krevan was hard to see. At a superficial level, Krevan's features were not invisible. He had the same bleached pigmentation of all the Raven Guard. His features were sharp, the hollows of his cheeks and eye sockets so deep that his flesh seemed to be being absorbed by his skull. The effect was enhanced by his pronounced brow and cheekbones. His eyes were almost hidden. They were narrow, dark, glittering judgment. They saw everything and revealed nothing. And always the shadows. Was it possible that his features themselves cast them? Was his face his own mask? The idea had occurred to Behrazi more than once. At other times he assumed that he was seeing Krevan's supreme skill at work. He had mastered wraith slipping to the point that it was his natural state of being. To pass unseen and unheard until the enemy's final moment had gone beyond instinct with Krevan. It was no different from breathing or from the beat of his hearts. Every action at every moment evaded the gaze of the observer. Behrazi took some pride in his own wraith slipping, but even when Krevan was standing directly before him, his impression of the captain was uncertain. Krevan existed in the gaps between perception. It seemed to Behrazi that it was an act of conscious choice for Krevan to step out of the shadows, a choice he rarely made. But this was not sorcery. It was a skill as material as the wielding of lightning claws. Now Krevan stood beside him, surveying the ambush preparations. They could hear the orcs coming closer, perhaps still as much as 1,000 meters away. The trap was set about 1/4 of the way up the east side of the forest. The land was still high here, the gorge still deep. To the north, the Eldar and the rest of the orc army were setting the woods on fire with their struggle. "The greenskins do not have too many routes open to them," Behrazi said.
"Oh?"
Krevan gestured to the trees behind them.
"Are those trees an impenetrable barrier?"
"For this style of attack..."
"Precisely. These orcs are wed to speed. Yet our arrival was clear. They have chosen to ignore us because we complicate the narrative of their battle."
Behrazi smiled.
"I don't often think of the orcs as complicated." "Few do, which is why the struggle for Armageddon was so desperate. The orcs are fully capable of shadow raids. There are many dead warriors who have learned that lesson too late. Our good fortune is that these orcs have not thought of that."
"They're running with their first impulse?"
"Yes."
The answer was so non-committal that Behrazi asked,
"You think they aren't, Shadow Captain?" "No, I think they are. But there are elements here that we do not understand."
That was true. Behrazi gestured towards the battle in the north.
"I don't understand that." "We are missing information," Krevan said. "Our knowledge is incomplete, and that leads to mistakes."
After a moment's pause, he added, "As the orcs are about to learn." If Behrazi had spoken those words, he would have smiled. He imagined that Krevan did, though he could not tell. It was night. They were in the shadows of the trees, and the captain was the ghost of a shape. Then, even as Behrazi looked, Krevan was gone. Behrazi turned his attention to other shadows around him. They were the members of his squad. Each Raven Guard was in position, a motionless absence, ready to uncoil and become a streak of lethal dark. Two of the absences were huge, the dreadnoughts Karom and Roust. Four squads of 8th Company were waiting at the edge of a long strip of land. They were only on one side, under cover of the woods. Krevan had ordered this distribution of the forces. It doubled the extent of the kill zone. There would be no enfilading fire.
"We won't need it," Krevan had said.
He had picked a particularly narrow strip of land. There were only about 10 meters between the forest's edge and the drop into the gorge. The orcs were close now. A huge snarl fell on the land. It came from engines, and it came from throats, and it was the sound of rampage. To the south, where the land dipped towards the plain, the orcs appeared. At the head of the charge were war bikes. They fouled the air with exhaust, the noxious clouds darkening the night still further. They were followed by four-wheeled vehicles, each with a gunner on the rear turret. Behind them, after a gap, came the infantry. Behrazi was startled by how small the gap was between the vehicles and the foot soldiers. The terrain was rougher here and the route narrow, forcing even the most reckless orc riders to slow down. Even so, the other orcs were fast. They were keeping pace with their mounted kin. They had travelled many kilometres since splitting off from the main force and been moving at a full run the entire way. As the horde stormed past him, Behrazi watched the greenskins closely. There was no sign of exhaustion. They ran as if they were fresh. They were sprinting, and they were speeding up. Krevan had said it. "Our knowledge is incomplete." The unanswered questions were about more than the Eldar presence and their ferocious defense of reclamation. There was something unusual about the orcs. They were faster and more exultant than Behrazi was used to seeing, even in a race defined by its gigantic appetite for war. They were also bigger. The entire mob, even its most mundane members, was larger than the norm. "Don't underestimate them," Behrazi thought. His next thought was, "Kill them." The lead bikes ran over pressure sensors, triggering cluster mines. Swarms of bomblets flew upwards and exploded. The first bikes caught the brunt of the blasts. They disintegrated in the fireballs of their fuel tanks. The orcs coming behind overcorrected. One of them turned a hard right and sailed into the air over the gorge. The orc screamed for the entire length of the plunge. Two more bikes went down, sliding and tumbling into the destruction of the others. Their explosions washed over the next. The orcs' momentum drove them into a growing wreck. Now the sounds of metal and flesh were shrieks instead of roars. More mines ripped out the bottom of one of the buggies. It veered sideways and flipped over, crushing driver and gunner. The way forward was blocked by a tangle of twisted vehicles and burning flesh. The orcs at the front tried to stop, but the others further back could not see what was happening. They heard the sounds of war, saw flames and smoke, and pushed forward even harder. The carnage escalated. And when at last the horde began to react, to pull back from throwing itself on its own pyre, Krevan's whisper came over the vox. "Now!" Along almost the entire length of the orc advance, the Raven Guard struck. They began with frag grenades. The blasts rippled over hundreds of meters. The jostling orcs were so crowded together that their bodies muffled the explosions. Limbs and organs rose into the air, bubbles in a tar pit. The horde reacted with rage and confusion. The orcs were being hit everywhere, and they could not see their enemy. Some of the greenskins blamed each other. They caused eddies of riot as they fought and died.
"Fire!" said Crevan.
The knight ripped the orcs to pieces. Concentrated bolter fire smashed into them. The mass reactive shells did more than slaughter. Their impact was such that the orc line was pushed back closer to the drop. The more heedless ran, so intent on finding their enemies that they did not look at the ground beneath their feet. They pitched themselves into the void. The casualties were great. The surprise was total. It was also brief. The orcs recovered quickly. They were not concerned with the deaths of their brothers as long as they were still in the fight. They began to return fire. Their weapons were crude. The guns were ridiculous in comparison to the bolters, but the orcs still held the numerical advantage, and the barrage of bullets and flame took a toll. Behrasi heard the vox chatter of damage reports begin. There was a sharp cry as one of his battle brothers in another squad was brought down.
"Take them,"
Crevan said. After one more burst of fire, the Raven Guard charged. Darkness snapped out from the trees at the orcs. The Space Marines moved as one, mag-locking their bolter rifles to their thighs and striking with lightning claws. A wall of ceramite, bladed with adamantium, turned the orc lines into meat. The dreadnoughts closed too, unstoppable as glaciers. The horde staggered again.
"Space," Crevan had said, "will be the other side of our attack."
It was. There was nowhere for the orcs to take another step back. But they did, and they fell by the scores. The war music changed again. The yells of rage were interrupted by the wet staccato thuds of bodies hitting the rocks far below.
"Forward!" Behrasi called. "Push them forward!"
He slashed and stabbed with short, quick gestures. He opened throats and punctured eyes. He used the full weight of his power armor, taking no steps without being grounded. He was a mass that would not retreat. Eighth Company advanced into the orcs at a slow, measured pace, while their claws struck with eye-blink speed. The orcs fell beneath Behrasi's tread, and they fell from the cliff. Crevan's trap was wiping them from the face of Lepidus. Still they fought. They fought well. The more heavily armored orcs were with the main force, destroying the Eldar. These were the lighter infantry. They were here because they could move faster. They were no match for Adeptus Astartes. But Behrasi's initial impression was correct. They were bigger, more ferocious. They struggled against him with an incandescent energy. Each greenskin was war given muscle, flesh, and bone. They chopped at him with cleavers and clubs, shot him point blank with shotguns that more than once blew up in the wielder's hands. His armor turned away the blades and projectiles. The Xenos filth could do little against him. Their battle was futile. Their end preordained. Yet they attacked as if the Raven Guard were the ones on the defensive. They roared with a savage joy. They fought as if their victory was at hand until the actual second of their demise. The Raven Guard finished their advance. Behrasi stopped one stride away from the drop. The mop-up was brief. He and his battle brothers gutted the last few orcs and tossed them over the edge. It was in the final minutes of the operation, when the mass of orcs was reduced to individuals, that he found himself most troubled. The orcs were laughing at him. Their numbers were down to a tiny handful, the massacre clear, and the orcs showed no frustration or any other sign of acknowledging their defeat. But they laughed. Behrasi silenced one more greenskin, and there were none left to fight. He looked up and down the line. The battle was over. The flanking force was gone. Apothecary Madar was dealing with the wounded. There were only two battle brothers who had fallen and whose progenoid glands he had to recover. The ambush had been a near-perfect success. The laughter of the orcs rang in Behrazi's ears. He tasted something bitter. Its flavor was uncannily like that of defeat. Krivan emerged from the smoke that surrounded the burning vehicles.
"Your evaluation, Brother Sergeant?" he asked.
"Their confidence in the face of their extermination.
The laughter was troubling, wasn't it?"
"What is it that they know?" Krivan shook his head.
"There was nothing sly or cunning in that laughter. I believe it emerged from a fact of their being."
He looked back towards the struggle near the bridge.
"The question is not about what they know, but what we don't. We are too much in the dark."
On the Vox's company channel, Kyligus spoke.
"The Eldar are moving towards the bridge."
Krivan thought for a moment before answering. The flames cast deeper shadows over his face.
"Let them cross," he said. "Help them cross. Then blow the bridge."
Behrazi blinked in surprise. Kyligus said,
"Shadow Captain, we will be with you before long."
After Kyligus signed off, Behrazi said nothing. Krivan heard him all the same.
"You have a question for me, Brother Sergeant?"
"Why are we helping the Eldar? Why not force the two races to finish their war? The orcs would be weakened, and that is useful."
"Because of what we were saying a moment ago. I wish to know what is happening on this planet."
Then he smiled. That was never a simple expression of pleasure with Krivan. It was more like the arming of a weapon.
"Besides," he said, "I believe the Eldar can be more usefully deployed."